Good morning, everybody. Thank you, Tom, for this nice, very kind introduction. I'm glad to be here because we were thinking about the relationships of architecture, planning, and cybernetics for quite a bit. And we also tried to engage our students in Vienna to think about the relationships of education and architecture, space, and knowledge in the last couple of years. So this is, a very nice occasion now to bring this together. On one side, there are three small rectangular holes. The opposite side has one hole, and the remaining sides have two holes each. You don't know what's going on inside, but something is. By pulling and pushing the things that stick out and by poking around inside with a stick, you're supposed to figure out what arrangement of pulleys, pegs, springs, and strings is inside. There are inexhaustible numbers of ways to arrange the insides with the components provided. One kid can set up the mystery arrangement for another. You can set it up for them. They can set it up for you. And this is certainly not limited to children. It's not at all a dull game for adults. The inquiry box or black box was designed for the teaching of theory building and theory testing to children. Cybernetics, the scientific study of control and communication in the animal and in the machine. Norbert Wiener, 1946. East Berlin, January 1969, Department of Research and Development of the Central Committee of the Socialist Unity Party of Germany. A lack of connection between models, line structures, and systems with our socialist system, its advantages and objective possibilities. A certain one-sided overemphasis on means. The models of electronic data processing should only be means for the realization of a scientific leadership activity and should not be seen superior to this. The electronic data processing is only an auxiliary instrument for the fight for real pioneer and excellence. Insufficient consideration of the main problem in the full application of electronic data processing and modern methods of conduct. The interpersonal relations of human-machine interaction, since these relations present the organic connection of the economic system of socialism to the total social system. There is a certain one-sidedness of the content of the subject matter, which is too much focusing on special issues in the field of electronic data processing, and therefore is not delivering the necessary overview, especially in the introduction to the questions of Marxist-Leninist organizational science, especially in decision-making exercises. Nearly 50 years ago, on October 7, 1969, the GDR celebrated its 20th anniversary. Art exhibitions in every district capital, political demonstrations, concerts, and festivals in the capital of Berlin were intended to generate an optimistic atmosphere. While the State Socialist Unity Party looked back at 20 years of existence, the perspective into the future was described in the brightest colors. I quote, "GDR, that is the modern socialist German state that owns the future." Tirelessly, the leadership of the SED under Walter Ulbricht promoted the idea that the transformation of the socialist system towards communism would be achieved under its rule. In this deterministic conception of time, science played a key role. With the help of science, the future could be forecasted accurately and with certainty. An important part of the larger frame of the festivities around the 20th anniversary, now mostly forgotten, was the grand opening of a campus for computer training and education in Wuhlheide, in the eastern outskirts of Berlin. Here, in the middle of the woods, plans were made for the utopia of a highly developed, technologically advanced, and modern socialism within an architectural and artistic environment. This paper explores this particular architecture of education in the GDR in the late 60s, the so-called, and as you can see here, Academy of Marxist-Leninist Organizational Theory, and I'm going to cut this down to AMLO. So the AMLO was a part of an imagined utopia of modern socialism. I will argue that the architectural plan and the exhibition design of the AMLO were based on the principles of socialist management theory and cybernetics. This future place, which only existed until 72, can be read as a synthesis of representation of education, pedagogical concepts, intellectual history, political theory, visual arts, and architecture. I will show that the ideas which led to the design of this socialist educational utopia were at the same time the driving forces of modernization and emancipation, as well as of political oppression and ideological limitations. Seen in the global context of high modernity and landscapes of education after World War II, the AMLO represented one peak of cybernetic thinking around the world. However, whereas Western democracies laid the groundwork for the computer or information age of today, already in the 60s, conditions within socialist dictatorships actually hindered the evolution of these ideas in later decades. Therefore, I structure the talk in the following way. I'm going to start with a brief analysis of the history of the AMLO. I will show the strong entanglements of architecture, education, and cybernetic thinking in the late 60s, supporting an argument that Emily Thompson and Peter Gallison already brought into debate in the late 1990s, I argue that the production of science and knowledge, so if you would like the educational framework, has a distinctive space and that the analysis of such spaces is important for the understanding of discourses on education. In the third and last part, I introduce briefly the concept of a socialist exhibition theory that would have allowed the visitors of the AMLO to deal with machines in a new way, creating an experimental and, at the same time, limited environment of human-machine interaction. As mentioned in the beginning, the AMLO can be seen as a concrete example of the connection of science and technology with political fantasies of power and a belief in a future to be determined and planned. The Academy was based on the principles of socialist management theory and only existed between 1969 and 72. Nowadays, as you can see on the right, only the fence has survived, and nothing commemorates this important place of a scientific technical utopia in German history. However, it was one of the most important places in the GDR where a socialist scientific utopia was objected and materialized. In autumn 69, an impressive architectural complex opened. Five large rectangular halls settled in the forest in which the leading members of the party, the economy, and science should be trained with the newest developments in computer research of the GDR and learn how to work socialist with the computer in their respective fields. The participants were seen as avant-garde, proving the connectivity of socialism and the computer. The complex was built in only a couple of months and was commissioned by the Ministry of Industry. The architect was Richard Paulik, pupil of the Bauhaus School in Dessau before the war, then exiled during World War II in Shanghai, and later returned to the GDR where he became one of the most prestigious architects. He did also contribute for the Stalin Allee in East Berlin. And if you have time, I would recommend to you to go to the Café Sibylle on Stalin Allee, on Karl Marx Allee, sorry, where they have a, sorry, where they have a small but very interesting exhibition on Richard Paulik right now. So Paulik was famous for his talent of organization and for his ability to solve complex problems like the lack of workers or constructing materials. Both was important when erecting the complex in 69. Paulik co-worked with a larger team of architects and designers to create a totally, at least for the GDR, new kind of exhibition architecture and a spatial staging related to the computer. They not only developed a new kind of exposition in which the visitor was an active participant, but they also created a spectacular staging for the GDR-produced computer, and please do not laugh, the Robotron 300, by presenting the machine in its natural environment fully functioning. So you can see on the left, this is the Robotron 300 with all its elements, and on the right, you have the control board in the collection of the Technical University of Dresden. Since the Academy did only work for 3 years and was not open to the public, it is neither a part of a broader memory nor thematized in historical research without some exceptions. When Honecker took over office in 71, the Academy was not anymore needed and was eventually shut down. In contrast to Ulbricht, Honecker did not see technology and science as keys for social and economic reforms into a socialist modernity. Instead, He and his cabinet focused primarily on housing construction and consumer goods to increase the living standard in a short time. To understand the function and the relevance of the Academy, it is necessary to speak briefly about the historical background which enabled the planning of such an institution. Even though Germany has a long tradition in inventing learning machines and some specialized industries were working with computing machines since the 50s, also in East Germany, it was only Ulbricht's program of economic reforms of the 60s, you can see on the left, which led to a broader acceptance of early computers. Before that, cybernetic thinking was labeled as decadent, intellectual, or inhuman. The cybernetic movement, as it has been called, was perceived in GDR as an attempt by Western, foremost American scientists, to create a theory of convergence between the capitalist and the socialist system, which was strongly negated by the party. However, when the first books on cybernetics were translated by the German mathematician and philosopher Georg Claus from Russian into German, it became more and more accepted in academia and economy. Analyzing the GDR under the late Ulbricht in 1917, also the CIA observed the further acceptance of cybernetics in theory and practice, as a report stated, I quote, "The idea of Ulbricht suiting up ranks of computers, computer tenders, and system analysts, and sending them forth to tilt with the GDR's hardcore party machine cadres boggles the imagination. And yet, inherent in Ulbricht's enthusiasm for cybernetics is the potential for an eventual showdown between a new elite of pragmatic technocrats and the old elite of ideologically motivated party hacks." And he was right. Especially younger cadres, which were born between the wars, like Günter Mittag, the secretary of the Economic Commission at the Politburo, or Erich Apel, chairman of the State Planning Commission, urged Ulbricht to implement new tools of planning and production in order to increase the competitiveness of GDR economy. Both saw cybernetics as an overarching method to combine science and practice and to guarantee a systematic approach to all developments in society and industry to be controlled centralist. Since the term cybernetics was ideologically problematic, the GDR coined the expression of a socialist synonym. And this is this monstrous word, the Marxist-Leninist organizational theory. It was defined in 1970 by the party in an internal document as a science which, I quote, "investigates the laws, principles, methods, and models valid in all areas of the developed socialist system for the rational design of the systems and the processes of planning and management taking place in them and between them with the aim to achieve the highest efficiency of the work," quote end. The immediate occasion which finally led to the decision to build an academy for the Marxist-Leninist organizational theory was the introduction of the GDR computer Robotron 300 in 1976, because this showed a lack of qualified users. Since it was understood that the modernization of the economy could only be realized by a comprehensive automatician, Ulbricht and his fellows recognized that a special institution to teach the principles of applied computer science was necessary. Because the existing capacities were not big enough and their methodology was not anymore seen as useful or contemporary enough, Ulbricht and Mittag commissioned a specialized training center for the GDR computer to underline the scientific and economic capabilities of the country. Within popular imagination, computers and cybernetics were already in the 1960s indeed part of a public, theoretic, and aesthetic discourse in the GDR. Here you can see that computer and its several applications for education and teaching were presented prominently at the 1969 Jubilee exhibition Fighters and Winners, in German Kämpfer und Sieger, in Berlin. While the calculating machine was to be used by the visitors, as you can see on the left, the Robotron 300 on the right was presented on stage as a living picture in which young men interacted with the machine, even though the machine was not functioning at this point because there was no climate control, so you can work with this. I don't know for sure if those were actors or actual computer experts on the stage. Both methods, education by try and education by observation were seen as legitimate strategies to represent and stage the computer in the 60s. And I would like to you to memorize those two strategies, so observation and try, because both will appear also appear at the AMLO. Of course, the living picture and the simulation of an authentic environment have not only to be seen in the wider framework of world and colonial affairs, but also within the Cold War, where exhibition designs generated modern and innovative environments for the physical, sensual, and intellectual representation of science and technology. For example, here in Moscow, 1959, the American National Exhibition with the famous kitchen debate between Khrushchev and Nixon. But I want to go back to the academy. Starting in February 69, the complex was nearly finished when it opened in October the same year. Paulik and his team were under high pressure since the opening of the academy was planned during the festivities of 20 years GDR. Photographs from Paulik's personal archive, now in Munich, show the progress on the construction site and also the difficulties in erecting such an enormous complex. In architectural terms, it's pretty easy to describe the situation. Paulik designed five very large halls without windows. The facade of the first hall, as you can see on the left, behind this there's the foyer, and of the last hall you can see on the image on the right, in the back, here. Behind this is there's the operations center. I will talk about this in a short time. Those two facades were threatened more individually and bared an abstract ornament out of metal so that they could be recognized as the most important parts of the building complex. And through the large windows, the visitors could see into the building, which was only possible at the foyer and at the operations center. The abstract relief has also been used in other contexts related to the GDR computer industry. For example, at a theater performance by the company Robotron, which constructed the GDR computers. You see, bottom left. The other three halls looked like factory buildings, and Paulik described himself their appearance as modern and contemporary. While the outer appearance can be described as unspectacular and even monotonous, it was the inner structure which made the academy an architectural innovation on its own right. The open and wide structure of the halls allowed the exhibition designers to create a specific environment in which the participants were led from one station to another without any barriers. And I refer to the talks yesterday because we heard this also in Bielefeld and in other contexts. So this is an interesting shared strategy. And secondly, Paulik's halls allowed a flexible exhibition architecture which could be expanded and transformed if necessary. So you can say Paulik designed the case for the exhibition, and this case can be seen as a black box. You don't know what's going on inside, but something is. The participants entered the black box, when they successfully completed the course, they left the black box prepared for the future challenges. In its topographical isolation, its architectural closure to the outside world, and its ideological exclusiveness, the AMLO represented a socialist heterotopia in the sense of Foucault's concept of a transformative yet disturbing space. So what I mean, you enter here, and you go through the parcours, and you leave here, and something happens to you. A description of a seminar of 1970 reveals the principles and the structure of the education architecture that was realized in the AMLO. Especially interesting for us is the leaflet I show you here from the Federal Archives with the topic overview, because here we can recognize not only the process of the tour on the basis of the floor plan, but also the individual teaching and learning stations and their distribution in the halls. This concept was developed by the DEWAG, so the stately owned advertising company of the GDR. And they developed this proposal in December 68, and actually it was realized here. The leaflet I show you here is the one of the 38th course of the AMLO, and it contains, as you can see, the four halls and the operations center. The stations were sorted alphabetically, big topic blocks in the letters A to G, and then subdivided by numbers. The internal differentiation was a clear choreography subordinate to the routing. The timing of the visitor's program was also considered. The sections should be self-contained, so each hall has one section, but by means of uniforms, stand components, lightning covers, and constant design highlights as dominant, interconnected everything and formed a functional whole. So I don't want to go into the details, but just briefly, so you start, as you may imagine, complex A is the introduction, 20 years of GDR, etc. Then complex B is the fundamentals of the socialist scientific and economic organization. It goes on to C, decision making within the planning and management system of a company by applying the findings of Marxist-Leninist organizational science and with the help of a modern device technology. They have training stations, etc. You go on to complex D, the complex socialist rationalization and automation for the reproduction process. And then finally, at the end, F and G, you would be faced with the Robotron 300, the computer system, and its economic meaning. As I have said, there were important ideological issues in the economic theory of GDR in terms of teaching cybernetics and its management in order not to be confused with capitalist strategies. So the academy in its whole, the architecture, the design, and the concept should prove and demonstrate the otherness of Marxist-Leninist organizational theory in comparison to capitalist management. That is why the exhibition shown in the halls was so important. Through its spatial and artistic appearance, the exhibition was intended to be a role model for a socialist exhibition theory in practice. You can see Walter Ulbricht at the opening. Unfortunately, we don't have many photographs, so it's kind of hard to reconstruct the inner appearance. Interestingly enough, Paulik and his team commissioned the Stately Advertising Agency to create the exhibition design. Usually, this agency designed exhibitions for the industry, educations like the famous fair in Leipzig. This explains why the exhibition in the AMLO has a lot of features which are typical for industrial exhibitions and sales shows. The agency underlined its exhibition concept with a theory of socialist product propaganda, quote, to make the viewer aware of the connection between organization and electronic data processing, quote end. The designers intended to create an exhibition in which, I quote, the high potentials of the GDR for the future progressive formation of every part of social, political, cultural, and economic life become clear, quote end. This aim should be reached in a twofold way. First, the design of the exhibition was intended to be active, participatory, and should motivate the viewer to engage with. And secondly, architecture and design were supposed to underline the context and the systematic connection between the different stations of the exhibition. You start in the first hall with the basic principles of the economic reforms, and you end in the last hall with a realistic representation of how the computer works and is programmed. I think that the most important methodological strategy applied here was to involve the viewer as an active element and, symbolically speaking, as an essential part of a cybernetic chain. By walking through the halls, by trying out the machines, and by taking part in the staging of progress in socialism, the viewer merged with the architecture, the exhibition design, and the machines. In the sources, the designers speak about the games to be played during the exhibition, that machines will control success or failure of each participant, and that each course is programmed. Therefore, the participants, the exhibition, and the machines all became an ideal configuration of an utopian socialist world of technology and science. Controlled and ruled by men, the scientific utopia represented the merge of cybernetic thinking, ideological assumptions, and economic progress. This was indeed comparable with Project CyberSyn, Salvador Allende's Chilean program aimed at constructing a distributed decision support system to aid in the management of a national economy. The project in Santiago, if you like, a very large version of the Academy in Berlin, consisted of four modules: an economics simulator, custom software to check factory performance, an operation room, which you can see here, designed by Guy Bonsiepe, and a national network of telex machines that were linked to one mainframe computer. Come to the end. I suggest to see the Academy as an ideal place of future of the GDR, combining elements of the reform program in one designated place: the unity of theory and practice, new technologies and forms of diffusion and presentation of knowledge, an overarching concept of capacities of science and technology for a modern society, and an optimistic interpretation of the future as a solvable challenge for the socialist community. The Academy was the point of crystallization for those approaches, an artificial counterpart against the economic reality in the GDR, and a concrete alternative to the technophobia dominant in large sections of the party. As Peter Galison wrote in 1999, I quote, "Architecture can help us position the scientific and cultural space. Buildings serve as both active agents in the transformations of scientific identity and as evidence for these changes," quote end. Keeping this in mind, I would like to suggest to you some hypotheses concerning the character of the Academy. So the Academy was a place in which an adopted future was exhibited and staged, in which a specific group of people should have been prepared for this future, and a place in which it was tried to naturalize the computer through architecture and design. The Academy was a place of the discourse of how science and technology should be situated in the socialist society. And finally, the Academy was a place of a socialist way of producing knowledge and was planned to create an alternative to capitalist spaces of science, knowledge, and education. That makes the Academy an exceptional example of a socialist utopia of science and technology. Thank you.